Hi, this is Jerry Gionis, your favourite Australian photographer, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 16. Canon earnings are down. Will their rumored full-frame mirrorless body turn the ship around? In this episode, Sony's Alpha project manager says A-mount isn't actually dead. Canon announces disappointing losses. What can be done to turn that around? A UK mother makes a big deal over retouching of school photos. And drone insurance is available. Do you need it? All that and more in episode 16 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Jerry, for opening the show. I really appreciate it. Love your work, and thanks again from a fellow Greek. Now, if you'd like to check out Jerry's work, head on over to icesociety.com. That's icesociety.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 16 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Canon just announced its quarterly earnings, that would be for Q3 2015, and revealed that its operating profit for the quarter was approximately $665 million US. That sounds great, right? And it does, until you learn that it's fallen 21% compared to last year, and that total revenue fell by 4.5%. Remember, in business, earning money is the goal, not losing it. So that is no bueno. The company has also changed its full-year earnings estimate due to a drop in the value of the Japanese yen, so that didn't help at all either. According to Reuters, this stems from smartphones eating significantly into consumer demand for compact cameras, while mirrorless continues to eat away at Canon's market share, which of course is mostly DSLRs. Their mirrorless offerings, as we know, are very sad. So sad they're crying right now. Okay, that doesn't make sense. But you get the idea. No one has yet to tell me that they're super excited about Canon's new M10 or any of the others in the EOS M system. In my opinion, they just can't stand up to the likes of Sony, Olympus, Panasonic, and Fujifilm. They just can't. The specs are just unimpressive, and clearly consumers feel the same way because it doesn't look like a whole lot of people are buying these. Have you met anyone with an EOS M? Exactly. You know, I mention Sony E-mount a lot because I own some of that gear, but Fujifilm and the others are all specced out with very capable systems. EOS M, not so much. Now, the buzz in the industry is that Canon sees the writing on the wall and plans on focusing more of its efforts on mirrorless starting in 2016, and I really hope that's true. How great would it be to see Canon wow us with a serious mirrorless body? That would be awesome. They've been making cameras forever. If they put their know-how toward fighting the good fight, they would earn my respect. I would be incredibly happy to announce a killer Canon mirrorless body, but so far we haven't seen that. Why? Because that would make Sony nervous. Again, I love what Sony is doing. I love my Sony gear. But right now, they're at the top of the heap and by quite a margin. Canon nipping at its heels would get their attention big time. Right now, Sony is not even close to being concerned about Canon. But a serious Canon mirrorless system would cause Sony to up its game even further, and that kind of competition would bring about even cooler things for consumers all around. Now, according to an article published on Canon Rumors, they're hearing from reliable sources that Canon is actively working on a full-frame EOS M mirrorless camera with some variant of the new EF M mount. So we're going to have to see how this thing shakes out, but this is encouraging. Canon has released four mirrorless cameras so far, the M, the M2, the M3, and then the M10. And all of those are pretty entry-level cameras containing APS-C crop size sensors. This would definitely be interesting, a full-frame EOS M camera, but will it be in 2016? We'll see. Maybe don't hold your breath, but if we see a new serious camera coming out of Canon and we don't see one from Nikon, that is not at all good for Nikon as a company. Even if you don't shoot mirrorless, it's time for these companies to field serious mirrorless cameras just to be able to shore up the bottom line and make things stronger for their DSLR market. If they run out of cash and can't afford to develop DSLR cameras, that doesn't help anybody. So how about Nikon? Crickets. Chirp, 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 chirp. That's all we're hearing. I hear nothing solid on the Nikon mirrorless front. No one is talking about it. Nikon's current system is likewise uninteresting to consumers, and I'm not sure Nikon has the kind of cash it needs to battle it out on both DSLR and mirrorless fronts. The kind of money it takes for R&D and launching a serious mirrorless system is hefty, and I'm not sure they want to spread themselves thin like that. Canon can afford to do it, but I'm not sure Nikon can. Despite the losses that Canon has had, they still have a pile of cash, and now is the time to field a serious mirrorless system and compete with Sony and the others. People like to point out that DSLR sales are being affected by other factors as well, and that's true, but mirrorless is one of them and a significant part of that. I think we're going to see a serious mirrorless camera from Canon in 2016. This is the year. I can just feel it. And the industry buzz is that something is coming. So we'll see. You know, they're a business and businesses need to make money for its stockholders. And right now, DSLR sales not doing so well. So my gut tells me that in 2016, it's going to be a pivotal year for both Canon and Nikon. Who'll win and who'll lose? Wait, now that was a little bit Iron Chef. All right, well, someone's going to reign supreme. We'll see who it is. All right, in episode 14, I proclaimed Sony A-mount dead. Well, days later, Sony Alpha project manager Kenta Hanjo said in no uncertain terms that this is untrue, saying, quote, "I want to reassure all A-mount users we are not quitting A-mount. We are still going to develop," end quote. Now, I take Kenta at his word. Everyone says he's a great guy, and if you've seen him interviewed, such as this one from DP Review, he's incredibly forthcoming and candid. So if he says that A-mount isn't dead, that's good enough for me. But here's what's confusing. As we reported in that episode, Sony UK responded to users on Twitter as well as Facebook that no A-mounts were planned. They couldn't have been more clear about that, and their message was consistent across time. So maybe the reality is somewhere in between. Sony has clearly been focused on E-mount. No one can argue against that. I mean, we're talking one A-mount body in the last, 18 months and two lenses in the past year or so? That's not exactly fully supportive of their A-mount line. They are definitely passionate about E-mount. That's where all the innovation and exciting technology is, not A-mount. So you have to wonder if they'll still develop A-mount, but it'll be a minimal effort. Keep the A-mount faithful happy with a new body or lens here and there. Don't officially kill it off, and try to keep everyone satisfied at least. Personally, I believe that A-mount is seen as transitional to Sony. I believe they see it as a stable of lenses for which E-mount users can buy, along with something else to purchase from Sony, an adapter, until the E-mount glass matures. I'm talking about f2.8 and faster glass, the expensive good stuff, right? Okay, so maybe A-mount isn't dead, and I'm doing air quotes here. Maybe it's something different. So I think I'm going to officially move it from dead to zombie status. It's the undead, basically. Looks and smells dead, but it's still kind of sort of alive. I think that's a more accurate description now. Anger does not accurately describe how I feel about this next story. Video has surfaced online of photographers in Singapore being incredibly cruel as they harm fish just to lure eagles closer to photograph. I know, right? The video shows men using syringes to inject air into fish, then placing styrofoam inside of them to ensure that they'll float on the surface of the water. These are live fish that they're doing this to, by the way. They're not dead. They're alive. I know some are going to say that this is no big deal, that they're just fish, and that fish are used as bait all the time, but there's just something a little over the top, in my opinion, about injecting them with air and styrofoam for photography's sake. This isn't to catch fish to feed anyone's family and survive. This is to photograph eagles, to make prettier pictures. And so in doing so, let's harm some fish. No biggie, right? Well, I think it is. In the video, we see quite a few photographers with serious gear poised at the ready to photograph these eagles descending on the floating fish. So this was apparently some sort of workshop or other event for photographers. Now, as if this wasn't foolish enough, the birds who are ingesting the fish are the critically endangered gray-headed fish eagle in that region. According to the 10,000 Birds website, less than 20 of these birds are available for breeding in the wild. So basically, they're putting these birds at risk so they can photograph them. And I think that is just wrong. If you need to go to these extents to photograph an animal, perhaps photography just isn't for you. It's kind of like those hunts that they put on for extremely wealthy people, where they let you hunt in an area where it's extremely easy to find and shoot animals. In my opinion, this is abhorrent behavior, and I hope that they catch these people that are doing this nonsense, because that is just not cool at all. You know, take an actual wildlife photography workshop from someone who's competent and stop doing these canned shoots like this. It is just stupid. They should be ashamed of themselves. I wanted a little bit more insight in this, so I reached out to world-famous wildlife photographer and Nikon ambassador Moose Peterson, and here's what he had to say. Quote, "This is not new. Been done for decades. Photographers have put bladders in fish in Alaska forever to get the shot. It is also a tool biologists use. For example, during the Exxon Valdez, this was used to capture oiled eagles." End quote. Now, I think it's important to point out here that Moose did not say that he has done this, so I don't want anyone to draw any conclusions that Moose is condoning this or saying that he's done it. He's just saying that this has been done for a long time now. Whether or not this is legal or should be done is up to state and federal laws, but personally, I think you just go to where the eagles are and maybe bait them, but don't put styrofoam in them, especially if you know that they're going to ingest that. That can't possibly be good for them. So there's that. As if there wasn't enough Sony news to report, and it seems like almost every episode, it looks like Sony is acquiring Toshiba's image sensor business for what's said to be about $165 million US. According to Reuters, its sources are hearing that Toshiba plans on selling its manufacturing plant to Sony and getting completely out of that business altogether as part of a major restructuring plan for the company. This comes at a pretty good time for Sony because demand for Sony sensors outweighs its ability to make them. So having that manufacturing plant come online sometime in the next year or so will definitely help them with their sensor division, which they're spinning off from the main company. Now back in 2014, which was a year ago as I record this, Sony made 40% of all image sensors, with competitors OmniVision at 15.7% and Samsung coming in at 15.2%. So if true, this deal would make Sony an even larger player in the sensor business as demand continues to increase. And don't forget, they not only make sensors for their cameras as well as Nikon's, they make them for a slew of smartphones as well. Sony sensors are highly sought after, and that doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. So having this additional manufacturing capability will help them big time. Do you boomerang? I don't. Maybe I should, though. I think the older you get, the less likely one is to try new things such as boomerang by Instagram. But I think that'd be a mistake. You never know which thing is going to be a huge hit and be helpful to your photography business. I've seen people start using Instagram and suddenly they're gaining serious traction with their desired audience. It is just crazy. So you just never know. Well, Instagram has launched a new app called Boomerang, which lets you share your life using extremely short looping animations. It shoots 5 still photos in just 1 second, then turns those frames into a moving picture that plays forward and backward and repeats until you move along, basically. Creative people such as photographers could totally use this to figure out ways to capture the attention of an audience and use it for their business. So in that regard, I think it's worth looking at. No login is required, and it couldn't be easier to use, unlike many other apps out there. Some of them are so darn complicated, you just want to give up. Now, after you've created a boomerang sequence, you can share it out to Instagram, Instagram's owner Facebook, or other services you'll find behind the More button. The videos are saved, so you can watch it to your heart's content later, too, as well. Now, if you'd like to give it a shot and see how you could use it for fun or for your business, you'll find Boomerang available right now for iOS or for Android. A number of months ago, I sold my Nikon D4S to the Miami Dolphins. My buddy John Willie over there, whom you heard open episode 10, is their head photographer and heads their imaging department. You know, they're making better use of that beastly body than I was, so I sold it. Now, for $6,000 US, the Nikon D4S is every bit as awesome as you imagine it to be. It is an amazing body. And part of that awesomeness is its ability to shoot Sony's XQD card. What's annoying, though, is that there's only one slot for XQD, and there's one for CF. Now, personally, I love the CF cards, and I know they're going the way of the dodo bird. SD cards are what most cameras take these days. So I've accepted it. I just don't like it. Since 2011 or so, though, XQD cards have been touted as CF's replacement, and that really never happened. SD cards have clearly won out. But for most pro bodies, you still see compact flash. And in Nikon's top bodies, not only do you see one of those, you see one of those XQD card slots. I wish they would just settle on a card format and put two of the same in there. It is so annoying to have one of each. Having redundancy in cards and card readers, etc., is not fun. That's not a very pro feature in my opinion. Now, where XQD really shines though, is speed. Nikon Asia just posted a performance test video reminding us why XQD is preferable if speed is what you desire. It absolutely smokes CF cards, hands down. In a Nikon D4S, a XQD card can record 67 uncompressed 16.2 megapixel NEF RAW files at 11 frames per second, or over 200 JPEGs in a single burst. That is just insanity. I've tried that in real-world shooting, and while it's completely overkill, even for football or soccer, I can see where it'd come in handy for motorsports or any time where you just need a camera to keep up with you, thus why it's in a pro body. But where an XQD card really shows its usefulness is when it comes to transferring those files to your computer. For the impatient, that's me and a lot of you out there, and those on deadline, being able to transfer 1,000 images to your computer 3 times faster is a massive help. When there's no time to waste, XQD is what you really want. But they're crazy expensive, and mostly in the high-end bodies, even after all these years. So there's those things to take into consideration. A UK mother named Alexandria Norman caused quite a stir recently when she called out Southampton-based Yellow School Photos over its retouching service, saying that it sends the wrong message to children. The school portrait company has apologized and has since pulled that service, but I think that it's a little bit much to be complaining about this. And that's coming from me, mind you. So that says something. In a poll on our site, we asked, should school portrait companies offer retouching on student portraits? Of the more than 2,400 respondents at the time of this recording, 50% said yes, any retouching is fine, 33% said yes, but only some edits, 8% said yes, but very rarely, and 9% said no, never. So it sounds like most of you out there agree with me on this. I'm all for teaching kids not to be obsessed with how they look in photos, of course. But what if they'd rather not remember themselves with braces or have that unfortunate zit removed? That should be available. It sounds like this mother wants it all to be out there. So if you looked horrible that day, that's how you're going to look for the rest of your life in fifth grade. That's wonderful, right? Nope. This reminds me of a story here in Utah from May 2014 where Wasatch High School, on their own, had a company make everyone's clothing more modest. Girls with sleeveless tops got sleeves. If you had a plunging neckline, you got more material. Cleavage? What cleavage? There's no cleavage in Utah. That was fixed as well. That school was unapologetic, citing the fact that signs were posted and students were aware that the dress code for that day for school photos was to be more modest. So it was dress modestly or no photos for you. And that's a gun to the head tactic right there. That almost never works out well. I think that parents should be allowed to choose whether or not their kids' photos are retouched or not. As parents, these are the decisions that you make. But for one parent to make a big deal about this and take away the ability for everyone to choose for themselves, that's a bit of a problem, I think. Maybe put it to a vote next time, right? Done. Just when you think Sony can't possibly come out with something cooler than it already has, they announce a new CMOS sensor capable of shooting in ridiculously low light. And it could pave the way for future sensors in our digital cameras. Called the Starvis, and that's all in caps, this new sensor, which is mostly designed right now for industrial applications like surveillance cameras, etc., features a new back-illuminated CMOS sensor that needs very little light to produce usable images. What they've done is extended the sensitivity of this sensor beyond the visible light range into the near-infrared range. But what's really weird is Sony put out a really goofy video promoting this sensor in which the narrator says Starvis a bunch of times with the cheesiest music I've heard in a long, long time. So, okay, cool sensor, uncool video. Not everything coming out of Sony is a winner. This video, at least. The sensor, we'll see. With a nickname like Sharky, I must love Shark Week and Shark Tank and everything with the word shark in it, right? Nope. It's not how it works. Sharks are cool, though. I mean, come on, tell me they're not cool. But anyways, I digress. If you watch Shark Tank on ABC, You saw all five sharks, as they're called, interested in a company called X-Craft, which builds next-gen camera drones that really up the game. They successfully raised $1.5 million US on that popular show for a 25% stake in their company, giving X-Craft a valuation of $6 million. The company currently has two drone projects. The first is the X Plus One, a hybrid drone that can take off and hover just like other multi-rotor drones, then switch to fixed wing mode where it can really haul booty at 60 miles per hour. Think about how fast that is. We're talking the ability to nearly keep up with traffic on most highways, where you shouldn't be flying drones, by the way. Just saying. I know someone's going to try it. Don't do it, especially these days. Now, the second project they have is called the Phone Drone, which is currently on pre-order as a Kickstarter project, and it's at $175,000 US as of this recording, with still more than a month to go, and they only needed to reach the $100,000 mark to make this project a reality. And as you may imagine, the Phone Drone is indeed yet another way for you to destroy your smartphone. I joke, but seriously, I'm not putting my iPhone 6 Plus in a drone and sending it on its way anytime soon. I have a hard enough time as it is, keeping it from falling out of my hands, I don't know, 3-4 feet off the ground or so and cracking. So I just can't see putting it in a drone. Now you know, someone is going to drive out to a remote lake somewhere, put their phone in one of these, hit record, send it up over the lake, lose it in said lake, and then not have a way of calling their spouse to tell them how dumb they were. Yeah. It's a cool project with pretty sweet technology, but be prepared to lose your phone. iPhones alone are like $600 US to replace. If you've got insurance on it, it's maybe $200, but you're supposed to send the phone back. So if you lose your phone in the lake, you don't have a phone to send back. So there's $600 plus the drone. The company says it's in a universal protective case, but can it survive a fall from 100 feet? I'm thinking no. Petapixel user Paul Menard apparently thinks as I do and said, quote, doesn't the idea of strapping your expensive, relatively heavy, private phone to a quad seem a bad idea? End quote. Yes. Yes, it does, Paul. A very bad idea. I wouldn't put anything other than a cheap phone in this thing. No doubt about it. But talk about a gift for someone who has everything, right? However, if things go wrong, maybe they won't appreciate the gift so much. You might need to chip in on a phone with them. If you're brave, though, you can pre-order a phone drone with a contribution of $190 US on up. And if you want something which won't put your phone at risk, you can pick up the X Plus One for between $1,549 and $2,199 US. If you're a drone owner or plan to be one, you know that a national registry is coming here in the United States, and there are quite a few rules and regulations to follow to stay within the law. Oh, and people might shoot your drone out of the sky because they don't appreciate the technology that you're in control of. So there's that. Well, now you can purchase insurance specifically designed for camera drones, which might actually be a really good idea. Remember, if your drone falls out of the sky causing damage, injury, or death, you're responsible, and it's doubtful that the insurance you currently hold covers you. You know, aside from camera drones, many photographers really don't know this, and I don't know why, but if you're doing shooting in your studio or on location and your clients get injured or die and they or their family sue you, you're hosed unless you have liability insurance. It surprises me how many photographers overlook insurance like this. They may insure their gear, but when it comes to insuring themselves and protecting their families from complete loss, they overlook it for some reason. You know, if you get sued, you could possibly lose your home. And there are scores and scores of examples of this happening in business. Just within the photography industry alone, there's plenty of examples. So drone insurance is probably a good idea, I'm thinking. And now well-known insurer AIG has a policy for just that purpose. Their new unmanned aircraft insurance is now being offered through AIG Aerospace, and coverage protects both your drone as well as liability should something go really wrong. It's able to cover those operating the drone as well as non-pilots, you know, those that are maybe operating the camera while you're flying the drone, loss from malfunctions and failures, physical damage, third-party liability, and, quote, war, hijacking, and terrorism, end quote. Now, don't you love that last part? You know, if any war, hijacking, or terrorism is happening using your drone, you've got bigger issues than insurance. AIG says the policy can be tailored to the individual's needs, and Business Insider reports that AIG's CTO, that's Chief Technology Officer, himself owns a drone that's controlled via his iPhone and wants to make sure that his company is an insurance industry leader as the drone industry continues to take off. No pun intended, I'm sure. Or maybe it was. Now, how much it costs depends on quite a few factors and the type of coverage you desire, but if you're looking to protect yourself, drone insurance might be a good idea. I know. Drone ownership is not nearly as fun as it used to be, right? This industry is maturing, and things like registering your drone and protecting yourself with insurance just look to be part of it these days. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 16 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question for us to answer here on the show, or just give us some feedback. And you can call us at 206-333-9308 to leave it as well. If you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm at LensShark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 17. Well, it's f8 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.